Accession number 26755, Reel 6.
Ronald Charles Savage, tape number 3. Yes, I got a lift back in the Red Captain Jeep and got back to the camp only about 2 or 3 minutes after the WO2. And he immediately put me on the 252 the next day for being absent from my post. The skipper, very nice chap as far as I'm concerned, tried to talk him out of it because he said one of the sergeants was going on demob shortly and I was earmarked to take over from him. But no, he was adamant that he was going to have his revenge and duly court-martialed. And the upshot of it was, well, I was the last one to be tried before lunch. And my defending officer decided that we would try and fight it on the fact that I had released myself on the post without any problem because that's how we carried out our business. Actually, we tried it, but it didn't come off. And unfortunately, as we were the last ones before lunch, it made the court-martial officers somewhat late for their pink gin. So I was found guilty and busted. I was lucky, I must admit. I didn't go inside. Anyway, I was reduced to the rank of craftsman, and I was put in charge of the unit canteen at that pub that I was talking about a little earlier. And I had my own little room up at the top, very handy for entertaining, in inverted commas. And I had a couple of staff there, and the next German PW who was in no hurry to go home, and he was working for me as a general cleaner. He did everything, he issued the nappy, all I did was collect it. Anyway, that lasted for about 6 months, and then I was taken into the workshops, well, into the office actually, for receipt and issues. And I was dealing with a lot of units where they're all being run by the German NCOs because the British troops were taking it easy. Of course, I was one too bad at German, and I carried the whole thing off on my own. Rather proud of the fact that when I eventually left and went to East Africa, I handed over to two British soldiers and a German interpreter. And I've been doing the lot for my Jack Jones. There was a funny sequel to that matter. Many years later, in 1960, I'd taken a local release in Kenya, as I mentioned earlier, and my brother-in-law and I went down to Mombasa, went to a little place where they had various bungalows for renting. He took his family, and I took mine, and my mother and father as well, plus a chap in the costume guards whom we had adopted. And we're there for a fortnight, and the beginning of our second week, who should pitch up But now, as a civilian, this ex-WO2 with his family. And I couldn't resist it. Within the hearing of his young sons, I said to my brother-in-law, that's the chap that had me court-martialed. It'd be dead simple to swim under the waves and put his feet under him and drown him, wouldn't it? The kid must have no doubt told his father, naturally enough, because his father never came into the water for the whole week that we were there. What he did for his fortnight, for his following week after we'd gone, I have no idea, but it rather amused me that he should really think that I would do a thing like that. I can't think of anything else at the moment, but when it comes to mind, if I haven't already mentioned it, I'll put it on the tape. And I'll bet you I didn't expect to get 3 tapes, or at least 2 complete ones, and one started up for the third one. Not to worry, I've enjoyed letting my hair down and going back over the old days. No deeds of daring do or anything like that, but just memoirs. Talking of deeds of daring do, going back to the days when we were in Holland, that was the time when Jay broke through and the Ardennes offensive, remember? Well, look it up in the history books. And we were confined to camp and we had to take up defensive positions, and I was given what was known as a PIAT, Projectile Infantry Anti-Tank. It was a spring-loaded device that expelled a bomb with a range of about 100 yards. I was one unhappy soldier when I thought that I'd have to wait for a Jerry tank to get within 100 yards before I could let fly at him. Anyway, as it happened, they never came down to our part of the woods, and in due course, of course, they were beaten back. Shortly after that, of course, the time when I was returned back to the base, to the workshops back in Normandy, I did feel the difference. One thing I forgot to mention, in the early days at Arbourfield, we had a chaplain there. He lasted about 6 months or so, I suppose. And he was replaced by another fellow named Pike. The first chaplain had a communion service every Sunday morning in a small wooden hut. And I think if he had 10 communicants, he was lucky. With Pike, I think he was Cambridge. Anyway, one of the varsities, the main varsities, and I think he's a rugger blue, a broken nose, and a wonderful chap. And within months, he moved out of the small wooden hut into the gymnasium because there's so many chaps attending communion. He was a wonderful chap. I believe it's the same one that eventually rose up to be chaplain general to the forces. It couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke.